Well, let me see. Where are we at this evening? This is part 35, lesson number 35 of the book of Genesis. Chapter 31, we're starting in verse 17 tonight. Before we get to verse 17, what we're going to find out is what we deal with is really Jacob's lack of ethics. Lack of ethics. And we really discover that Jacob is a very legalistic type of person, as are so many people that you probably know or have met throughout your lifetime. And Jacob is one of those people at this point in his life. And if you want to define ethics, really there's a ethics is the difference between morality and legality. It's the difference between what we should do and what the law says we have to do. That's really how you define what is ethical. What you should do and what you have to do. That's the definition of ethical. So Jacob, throughout his lifetime, has done what he had to do and what was legal, but not necessarily what was morally correct or what was ethical. And just as for instance, we have, you know, some time ago the purchase of the birthright issue from his brother Esau in chapter 25, verses 31 through 33. It was legal that he did that, where Esau sold his birthright to Jacob. You could say that it was legal for him to do that, for Jacob to buy it, but it certainly was not an ethical transaction on Jacob's part. The deception of his father Isaac, you know, putting on the goat skins and pretending to be his brother Esau. Was it legal to do that? Yes, it was legal, but it certainly was not ethical in any stretch of the imagination. And even though God, even from before the time they were born, said that the older would serve the younger, and so Jacob was in fact destined to receive the blessing of Isaac. And so the outcome was the same. The way that Jacob went about it displeased God. So the ethics of it and the morality of his actions was very unethical. You know, Jacob worked 7 years to obtain Rachel as his wife. You know, that was legal to marry the younger daughter before the older, but it displeased Laban. And it wasn't the custom of the people. So while it was a legal thing, it would have been legal, it was certainly unethical. So there's a difference. You know, another instance that we just looked at was the manipulation of the herds. And, you know, with the rods and all that, the peeling of the rods and Jacob, you know, manipulating the sheep that were born to be spotted and striped and all that. You know, whether he actually had a hand in that or whether it was God, of course it was God that did that. But, you know, was it legal that he did that? Yes. But, you know, because the agreement was that either came out spotted or striped or you know, that type of thing belonged to Jacob. So the agreement that was made, and he stuck to the agreement. So it was legal. But was it ethical? Absolutely not. And so all this lack of ethical conduct leads up to what is a final encounter between Jacob and Laban, and that's what we look at here tonight. This final encounter between the two and the parting of the ways. So God had instructed Jacob to leave and to return to his home the land of his birth and get back to the promised land. And so Jacob gathers up his goods and his flocks and tells his family to get ready to travel. And in verse 17, then Jacob rose up and set his sons and his wives upon camels, and he carried away all his cattle and his goods which he had gotten, the cattle of his getting which he had gotten in Padan Aram, for to go to Isaac his father in the land of Canaan. And they wait until Laban's off away from the tent shearing sheep. And while Laban is away from his tent, Rachel, the younger of the two daughters, Jacob's wife, goes in and steals the household gods. Now that tells you a lot about the beliefs of Laban. He was not a worshiper of Yahweh, of course, Jehovah, the one true God. And these are graven images, small statues. And Rachel does this unbeknownst to Jacob. You know, what has gone on throughout the years? You know, this is 20 years that Jacob has been with Laban, and that's a long time, and it's, you know, you get to know somebody after that length of time. Really, the behavior aspect of it, you know, you want somebody, and Jacob's unethical behavior throughout that amount of time, and this is just another instance where Jacob's trying to leave, you know, without Laban knowing. He's stealing away, in other words, without Laban discovering that he has left, until he's out of sight and down the road. You know, all the things that Jacob has done, while legal, he's bent the law all the time. You know, all these things, he's just bent the law unmercifully, you know, and to the nth degree. This lack of ethics, when somebody sees this all the time, it's hard for them to discern the fine line between unethical and unlawful, because it is such a fine line so much of the time. And so here's Rachel, and she goes into Daddy's tent, and if you remember, if you remember that, you know, the way that she felt, she and Leah had felt they were treated, you know, that they felt that they had been sold into, you know, and that there was nothing left for them and all that. So they felt almost betrayed by their father. So I'm sure that Rachel didn't see anything wrong with the stealing of the household gods. It's just such a fine line. Look at verse 15. Look at verse 14, rather. Chapter 31, verse 14. Rachel and Leah answered and said unto Jacob, "Is there yet any portion or inheritance for us in our father's house? Are we not counted of him strangers? For he has sold us, and hath quite devoured also our money. For all the riches with which God hath taken from our father, that is ours, and our children's. Now then, whatsoever God has said unto thee, do." So, you know, Rachel and Leah both felt quite betrayed of their father. So I'm certain that Rachel saw no legal issue with going in there and stealing those household gods. She didn't even feel that it was stealing. She felt like it was taking what rightfully belonged to her. Her father had stolen the dowry money. Her father had sold them. And so she's just getting back what rightfully belongs to her. Well, Jacob knows nothing about this business of Rachel.
going in there. And this is what happens when somebody is living on the edge of unethical and unlawful, as Jacob always did. And somebody else is watching this behavior all the time. Well, like I say, it's hard to discern when, you know, when unethical becomes unlawful. Well, Rachel crossed the line from unethical to unlawful. That's stealing. Those didn't belong to them. Well, at any rate, on we go with the story. And Laban, verse 19, went to shear his sheep, and Rachel had stolen the images that were her father's. So Jacob, he takes everything and leaves without Laban knowing. And though lawful, and following the command of God, technically to leave and go back to the land of his birth, Jacob leaves in a very unethical way, not allowing Laban to say goodbye to his daughters, to his grandchildren, to Jacob, to anything. So off they go. And Jacob, verse 20, stole away unawares to Laban the Syrian, in that he told him not that he fled. So he fled with all that he had. So you see the language. He's fleeing Laban as if he would be put in captivity if Laban knew. Well, that's not the case. So he fled with all that he had, and he rose up and passed over the river and set his face toward the Mount Gilead. Well, 3 days later, Laban is told the news that Jacob is gone. And well, Laban gathers up his brothers and servants, and I'm sure that there's weapons that are gathered up along with it, and they set out to hunt down Jacob, and it takes them till the seventh day to catch up. And it was told Laban on the third day that Jacob was fled, and he took his brethren with him and pursued him after 7 days' journey, and they overtook him in the Mount Gilead. Now, on the way to catching up with Jacob, God speaks to Laban. I'm certain that Laban probably had in mind when he found Jacob, because I'm sure he was just completely disrupt would be the wrong word, really ticked off, let's just put it that way. And I'm certain that he had ill thoughts of Jacob, and the weapons were going to be put to use, and the daughters and all the grandchildren and all the flocks and everything, all the goods were going to be returned to what Laban thought were the rightful owners, him. And Laban was, and Jacob was going to be left for dead wherever they caught up to him. But God intervenes and speaks to Laban right before he catches up to Jacob. And you see in verse 24 that God warns Laban not to try to persuade Jacob to change his course. In other words, don't say anything good or bad one way or the other. Now the language, if you read verse 24, God came to Laban the Syrian in a dream by night and said unto him, take heed that thou speak not to Jacob either good or bad. Well, and you think, well, that's kind of strange language, but it's very similar language if you look at chapter 24 in verse 50. If you remember that when that when Rebekah, the wife of Isaac, was still a young lady, and the servant had gone to Laban and found Rebekah. That, of course, Rebekah was Laban's daughter. And I'm sorry, Rebekah was Laban's sister at that time. And they were wanting to take Rebekah back so that she could be the wife of Isaac. And then Laban, if you look at verse 50, Laban and Bethuel answered and said, this thing proceedeth from the Lord. We cannot speak unto thee bad or good. So, in other words, they couldn't say one way or the other about taking Rebekah back to Isaac. So they weren't going to try to persuade them to leave or to stay, or say that it was a thing of the Lord or not of the Lord. So it's nearly the same language, and it's the same meaning. So God is saying, don't try to persuade Jacob from doing what he's doing, from going back home. So when Laban gets there, having been duly warned from God, Laban decides he's going to pretend to be the concerned father and grandfather. And that's just not Laban's nature at all. You saw that when Leah and Rachel were complaining, they said, well, we've been sold. The riches that we should have been stolen and spent by our father. We've been ignored. Our father couldn't care less about us. And so now Laban shows up with all this love and concern in his heart about the welfare and well-being of his daughters and grandchildren. And what are you doing with them all? I was just worried sick about everybody. And that's exactly what Laban goes on to say. So they meet up, and Laban overtook them, verse 25. Now Jacob had pitched his tent in the mount, and Laban with his brethren pitched in the Mount Gilead. And Laban said to Jacob, "What hast thou done that thou hast stolen away unawares to me and carried away my daughters as captives taken with the sword?" In other words, the implication there is that you've taken them against their will. Yeah, you've kidnapped them, because certainly they would have wanted to, come and said goodbye to me and all these things, because I'm a loving father and a loving grandfather, and I know they would have certainly, wanted to say goodbye. That's the whole implication. You must have kidnapped them away. And so, wherefore didst thou flee away secretly and steal away from me, and didst not tell me? And what you've done is you've taken away my opportunity to have this huge celebration with you before you left. This going away party, in other words. That I might have sent thee away with mirth and with psalms, with tabret and with harp. And thou hast not suffered me to kiss my sons and my daughters. Thou hast now done foolishly in doing and so doing. It's like your kids eloping and getting married in Las Vegas and taking away the one opportunity you had for a beautiful wedding. It's just a foolish move on your part. And that's what Laban is saying here. I'm the loving father and loving grandfather, and certainly you must have stolen them away, because I'm sure they would have all loved to give me a big hug and kiss, and I would have loved to kiss them back and told them how much I loved them and sent you with gifts and had a big party, and you've taken away that opportunity now. It's gone. So, and Laban, the loving guy that he is, now lets it be known, I could have killed you, except that your God came to me and warned me not to kill you. And as a matter of fact, my intention was to kill you, except that your God said, I better not kill you. So that's exactly what he says. He says, verse 29, it is in the power of my hand to do you hurt. In other words, to kill you. And that was my intention. But the God of your father spake unto me yesternight, saying, take thou heed that thou speak not to Jacob either good or bad. So you're a lucky little devil that God has saved your skin, because I was going to whack you one. So, now one of the problems is that Jacob, being somewhat, his personality having lacked ethical behavior throughout the past 20 years, Jacob or Laban has gotten to know him. Laban has gotten to know him, and Laban knows who Jacob is, and those kind of people, I'm certain that you have all known somebody like that throughout the years. And I realize that it's possible for people like that to change. But the fact of the matter is that the tendency is to always look at those people, especially before they change, if and when they ever do. But the tendency is to always look at someone like that, the first thing, in the worst light. And you look at them in any situation and you assume the worst. The first time, you know, whenever there's a choice of assumptions to be made, you always assume whatever could be worst because of just who they are. They are an unethical person. Their track record is that of doing the worst possible thing, of cheating, stealing, bribing, doing whatever it would take to make the situation bad. And Laban assumes that about Jacob. He assumes that the reason that Jacob has left so quickly and without saying goodbye is because of the theft of the household gods. You see, Laban knows that they're missing. The household gods, these are just little images of idols. But for Laban, those were extremely important. Nahor was Abraham's brother. Nahor was Abraham's brother. And so that was the other side of the family. It would have been Isaac's uncle. And Laban comes from that side of the family. Well, Abraham is the side of the family that worships Jehovah God. Laban comes from the side of the family that worships little God statues. Nahor's side. It's kind of interesting. It's sort of like having one side of the family that's Protestant, one side of the family that's Catholic. Or one side of the family that's Muslim, one side that's Christian. You know, well, one side of the family on this side is God-fearing, the other side worships little rock statues. Well, and Laban is the side that worships little rock statues, and his little rock statues are missing. Well, the little rock statues are extremely important. It's just like somebody took the statue of Mary out of a Catholic's front yard, and they're like, where did Mary go? You know, we bow to her every morning. And so he assumes that the reason that Jacob took off and fled with all the goods and everything he had is because he stole those. Wouldn't that be the assumption you'd make, Mike?
Can you imagine?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, you put two and two together. If you had a car and your car came up missing and the guy that you had living at your house for 20 years fled in the middle of the night when you had gone to visit a relative for a few days, you came home, your car was missing, and he had taken off. You put two and two together, he stole the car, and now he's trying to get away. Well, that's, you know, it's just logical. And so that's what Laban figured. It's just logical. So, in verse 30, he says, and now, though thou wouldest needs be gone, because thou sore longest after thy father's house, yet wherefore hast thou stolen my gods? And so in other words, you say that you're the reason that you're leaving is because you long to go back to your father's house. But the real reason is that you've stolen my gods. So it hasn't helped the case of Jacob the fact that his behavior for the past 20 years has been borderline unlawful. Unethical at the very best, but borderline unlawful. And if you just, you know, you just throw out one example, during that time, Laban's flocks have prospered because of Jacob's presence. Remember, Laban said, you know, wow, I want you to stay on, and because I don't want you to leave, because, man, I have really prospered because of your presence. And I know that God is, your God has blessed me because you live, you know, you've been here. So I want you to continue to be here. And so the arrangements come to, you know, agreed to, and Jacob says, that's fine. And so he says, but I want every spotted, striped, or ring-striped animal for my own. And Laban says, well, that's great, because it's like taking every black sheep from the flock. They're really rare. Well, as it turns out, everyone born has spots, stripes, and ring stripes, you know. And so Laban's flock dwindles down to nothing, and Jacob has all the animals. So, you know, Laban is a little PO'd at Jacob. Well, Jacob's only answer to all this is not a tremendous defense, but rather, Jacob answers, verse 31, and said to Laban, because I was afraid. I was afraid of you. For I said, peradventure, that thou wouldst take by force thy daughters from me. In other words, I was afraid that you would take your daughters from me if I said goodbye to you. Well, that's kind of a weak defense. But Jacob claims his innocence. And rightfully so. He didn't know about the gods being taken. He didn't take them. And so what he does is he says, whoever, if someone took the gods, whoever is found in possession of the gods, will, the sentence will be death. Of course, we know that Rachel is the one who took them. So, in verse 32, Jacob says, with whomsoever thou findest thy gods, let him not live. Before our brethren, discern thou what is thine with me, and take it to thee. For Jacob knew not that Rachel had stolen them. So not knowing that Rachel had the gods, he says, whoever has them, let that person die. So Laban and his and his henchmen, they start searching tents. And Laban went into Jacob's tent, and into Leah's tent, and into the two maidservants' tents, but he found them not. And went he out of Leah's tent and entered into Rachel's tent. I mean, this is like a made-for-TV movie, isn't it?
That's right.
And of course, you get a commercial break right here, right now. And so here's Rachel, and she's sitting on the camel. And of course, the camel has the you know, the rug on it with the saddlebags and all that stuff, you know. And she's sitting up on the camel, side saddle, of course, as a woman normally would. Now Rachel had taken the images and put them in the camel's furniture. Now the furniture is like the saddle, you know, the bags and all that. And sat upon them. So they're in there, but she's sitting on these, covering them up with her legs. And Laban searched all the tents. So Laban's in Rachel's tent and searched all the tents, and he found them not. And she said to her father, let it not displease my lord that I cannot rise up before thee, for the custom of women is upon me. In other words, it was her time of the month. And the Kotex company had not yet come into business yet. And he searched, but found not the images. So she had them all the time under her, and they never found them. So, Jacob, of course, he's standing there and says, "Aha! I was right. You were wrong. I knew it all along." So, Jacob, being the one who has always bent the law to his advantage, but never broken it, mind you, never broken it, he is mad. He is mad. And he justifies himself to Laban. And he cuts loose on Laban. He wants to give peace of his mind to Laban. And Jacob was wrong. And showed with Laban. And Jacob answered and said to Laban, "What is my trespass and what is my sin that thou hast so hotly pursued after me? Whereas thou hast searched all my stuff, what hast thou found of all of thy household stuff? Set it here before my brethren and thy brethren, that they may judge betwixt us both." Obviously there was nothing. So I could just hear this coming out of Jacob's mouth. Then Jacob starts to this is like my wife. This part is just like my wife. I mean, you know, if you're a guy and you're married, you know how wives are. They can dredge up ancient history from things that you have forgotten. You've forgotten them 30 years ago, and they still remember them. Well, that's Jacob. He must have had a woman's memory. He said, "This 20 years have I been with thee. Thy ewes and thy she-goats have not cast their young, and the rams of thy flock have I not eaten. That which was torn of beast I brought not unto thee. I bear the loss of it. Of my hand did thou require it, whether stolen by day or stolen by night. Thus would I was in the day the drought consumed me, and the frost by night, my sleep departed from mine eyes. Thus have I been 20 years in thy house. I served thee 14 years for thy two daughters and 6 years for thy cattle, and thou hast changed my wages 10 times. You know, oh, woe is me, woe is me, woe is me. You know, all the things that I've done for you." And then he goes on and starts talking about how God is on his side for all the things that he has done. Well, the fact of the matter is, just like we saw last week, well, Jacob is under the impression, you know, when he was doing his experiments with gene manipulation of the sheep and the goats, you know, with the peeled rods of the trees, trying to get them to bear striped and spotted goats and sheep, and it seemed to be working just fine. You know, he's saying, "Well, God's on my side because I'm doing this." Well, the fact of the matter is, God was doing it all. It wasn't because of anything Jacob was doing, and it wasn't because of the work of his hands or the sweat of his brow. But Jacob thinks it is. Jacob justifies all his actions because God has promised to be with Jacob. And so God is fulfilling promises that he has already made. And so Jacob sees this as justification for his unethical actions and loose, lawful lifestyle, basically. And so he says, "Except the God of my father, the God of Abraham, and the fear of Isaac had been with me, surely thou hast set me away now empty. God hath seen my affliction and the labor of my hands, and rebuked thee yesternight." What's wrong with that statement? Has God rewarded the labor of Jacob's hands? No. Matter of fact, if God could have slapped Jacob's hands for doing the things that he had done, matter of fact, he has numerous times slapped Jacob's hands for the things that he's done. And Jacob just refuses to get the message. Things all these years would have gone quite a bit differently had Jacob not been doing the labor with his hands that he had been doing. But Jacob's quite a bit like us. We see what we want to see, and we think what we want to think. So here's Laban, and in a court of law, you have to prove without a shadow of a doubt, or at least beyond reasonable doubt, the guilt of someone, and Laban's not able to prove that. But just like O.J. Simpson in his first trial, nobody really thought he was innocent. And Laban doesn't think Jacob's innocent either. Just because he's not able to prove the guilt doesn't mean that he thinks he's innocent. And he doesn't think that Jacob's a godly person either, just because he claims that God's on his side. So Laban does what really is a smart thing when you think about it. You almost have to give Laban a pat on the back. It's when you truly understand what's going on here. I mean, Laban, at first glance, Laban looks like the bad guy in the story. But really, at this point, you have to give Laban a pat on the back for being keen enough, smart enough to do what he's about to do. Because he's not stupid, and he knows Jacob enough to realize that here is a person who, if he has a law, you know, if the speed limit's 55, Jacob will go 55. Even if there's 6 feet of snow on the ground, Jacob is going to go 55 miles an hour. It could be pouring down rain, you might not be able to see the end of the hood of the car, Jacob will still go 55 miles an hour. But he won't exceed the speed limit. He is a legalist to the nth degree. Jacob will mow down he will mow down people that are stuck in the snow and they're out walking. He'll run right over them. And if he can't go 55 miles an hour in the car that he has, he'll go find a big four-wheel drive truck with giant monster tires and run right over people on the way to, you know, wherever he's going. But he will not exceed 55 miles an hour. He is the consummate legalist. Not breaking the law. Not ethical, but not breaking the law. And Laban understands that. So, realizing that, Laban answers and says unto Jacob, "These daughters are my daughters." Now, was that true? Absolutely. "And these children are my children. And these cattle are my cattle." Well, wait a minute. Are those cattle his cattle? They came from his cattle, didn't they?
Right.
And he says, "And all that thou seest is mine." What do we now know about Laban? Laban thinks that Jacob has stolen everything that he has from Laban. Laban thinks that Jacob did not earn anything that he now has acquired. The daughters, the children, the cattle, any of the goods. Laban looks at Jacob and just sees thief. "Jacob has stolen everything that he has from me." That's exactly what Laban thinks and how he sees Jacob. He was on his way to kill him to get everything back. And God says, "Don't touch him.
or I'll deal with you. But that hasn't changed Laban's mind whatsoever. Laban still looks at him and says, a thief. And that's what he says. He says, these daughters are my daughters. Children are my children. These cattle are my cattle. And all that thou seest is mine. And what can I do this day unto these my daughters or unto their children which they have borne? Nothing is the answer. He can't do anything because they're no longer under his power. Besides that, God has put constraint on him from doing anything. So the only thing that Laban can do is to put a legal constraint on Jacob and then let God deal with Jacob. Because Laban can no longer do anything to deal with him. Laban says, now therefore come thou, let us make a covenant. Now what is a covenant? It's an agreement. I and thou, and let it be for a witness between me and thee. So, having to put Jacob under the law to constrain him is also instructive to us about Jacob's spiritual state. When you can't just get along with a person without formal agreements, it's very instructive about the spiritual state. As Paul says in 1 Timothy 1:9, knowing this, that the law is not made for a righteous man, but for the lawless and disobedient, for the ungodly and for sinners, for unholy and profane people. So what does that tell us about Jacob? He was unholy, he was profane, he was ungodly, he was disobedient, he was a sinner. That's exactly what Jacob was. He stayed with just barely within the constraints of the law, but it did everything unethical that he could do within the constraint of the law, because the law is not the utmost that a person can do. It is the minimum standard. Thou shalt not kill. Is that the maximum that you can do for your neighbor? Is that the minimum standard? That's the absolute minimum that you can do for the guy who lives next door to you. I'm not going to kill him today. Gee, today I'm not going to kill the guy who lives next door to me. Well, congratulations. You've met the minimum standard. Good for you. So they set up a pillar and a heap of stones, and that's erected to mark the covenant between Jacob and Laban. It says, now therefore come, thou, let us make a covenant. I and thou, and let it be for a witness between thee and me. And Jacob took a stone and set it up for a pillar. And Jacob said unto his brother, gather stones, and they took stones and made a heap. And they did eat there upon the heap, and Laban called it, Jager should have Dutha, but Jacob called it Galeed. I like Jacob's name much better. And Laban said, this heap is a witness between thee and me this day, therefore the name of it was called Galeed. And Mitzpah, for he said to the Lord, watch between me and thee when we are absent one from another. If thou shalt afflict my daughters, or if thou shalt take other wives besides my daughters, no man is with us. See, God is witness betwixt me and thee. So you see, that was one of the concerns of Laban. They will. What Jacob would do without supervision. So the pillar and the heap of stones are there to mark the end of the divide between Laban and Jacob. The covenant is the agreement that they have that would mark the end of a stormy relationship of 20 years. Laban says to Jacob, "Behold this heap and behold this pillar which I have cast betwixt me and thee. This heap be witness and this pillar be witness that I will not pass over this heap to thee, and that thou shalt not pass over this heap and this pillar unto me for harm. The God of Abraham and the God of Nahor." Nahor, of course, being Abraham's brother. "The God of their father, judge betwixt us." And Jacob sware by the fear of his father, Isaac. Then Jacob offered sacrifice upon the mount and called his brethren to eat bread, and they did eat and tarried all night in the mount. And early in the morning Laban rose up and kissed his sons and his daughters and blessed them. And Laban departed and returned unto his place. Now in this whole encounter, really Jacob seems to have walked away the winner in the dispute, because he got to keep the wives, the children, the sheep, the goats, the herds, and all the goods that he left with. But the fact of the matter is that even after meeting and talking with Jacob, Laban was very unconvinced of Jacob's integrity. He was so unconvinced with Jacob's integrity that a covenant had to be made, and Jacob had to swear that he would not mistreat his wives or return with hostile intent against Laban. That's how much Laban distrusted Jacob. And if even when they parted, Laban still believed that Jacob had stolen the gods, the household gods, the flocks, the goods, and all that he had, as was testified to by the fact that Laban said, "All that you see is mine. And basically, you're getting away with stealing it from me." So the treaty, this covenant between Laban and Jacob, was needed. If you remember back to Abimelech and Abraham, how Abraham's behavior necessitated a treaty between Abimelech and Abraham, also between Abimelech and Isaac. So this was a problem that seemed to run in the family, that their character, especially when dealing with unbelievers, was somewhat less than ethical, somewhat less than exemplary, and not a good testimony. That sometimes happens to a lot of Christians, a lot of believers, that here in the confines of the church, people can be A-plus Christians and wonderful people, and they leave, and then once they get out into the world, become very worldly. And Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were very much the same way, I think, they were chosen by God for a particular reason, and at times displayed tremendous spirituality and were able to do great things. But on the other hand, there were other times when you read about them and they just were tremendous disappointments to read about, and certainly were somewhat less than perfect in their testimony of faith and behavior. So even to the point of needing to make treaties and covenants with unbelievers, because the unbelievers didn't trust them. It's a shame to even have to tell you this, but one of the groups of people that I am very cautious of doing business with generally is churches, because as a general rule, churches are some of the most dishonest people, groups of people that there are to do business with. Terrible payers, hard to get under bad. So it's you can do business with a lawyer, they'll pay you right away. Church, you almost gotta take them by the throat and drag them around. So, and that should tell you something. It should be the other way around. But I'd rather do business with 100 lawyers than one church. So go figure. On the other hand, Jacob was very convinced of his integrity, as are most Christians. And the reason that most people are convinced of their integrity is oftentimes because they're legalists. When you really think about it, those who are the most convinced of their own integrity, you'll find out sooner or later that they are legalists. And they equate legalism with integrity. In other words, they equate the law with integrity and ethics. And Jacob was quite a bit like that. He thought that righteousness and the keeping of the law were the same thing. In other words, Jacob, while he touched on that line of going over into breaking the law, he never crossed the line. And so if righteousness is by keeping of laws, you know, if driving under the speed limit makes you righteous, then Jacob would have been a righteous guy. You know, if that's what it takes, Jacob would have been a righteous guy. But you know, he believed he was morally pure and confident of God's blessing and approval because there was no breaking of the law. You know, he thought God looked at everything I do, and because I'm not breaking the law, God approves of it. And a lot of people are like that. Paul was absolutely like that. As a Pharisee, Paul was like that. Absolutely. I mean, he tells you that. Yeah, he was a perfect law keeper, and he was absolutely convinced that the fact that he was a perfect law keeper, that was the key to righteousness, because he was a legalist. But the fact of the matter is Romans 3:20, Paul, a verse that Paul writes, therefore by the deeds of the law there shall be no flesh justified in his sight, for the law is the knowledge of sin. The law is there for a purpose. It's to define sin, not to create righteousness. So it's those who believe in their own righteousness are you're generally going to find out that they're legalists. they're following a moral standard, which is one of legalism, and that's exactly what Jacob was doing. There's a lot of Jews in Jesus' day that were like that. The Pharisees were Paul was an example. Of course, Jesus taught quite differently. Need for a greater righteousness, need for a higher righteousness, one that was obtained by faith. Matthew 5:20 says, for I say unto you that except your righteousness shall exceed the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, ye shall in no case enter into the kingdom of heaven. So this business of righteousness obtained by the doing of things is not one that is that has any weight with God. It only has weight with us. We think of ourselves as being good because of what we do. But God doesn't think that way. So the real problem with Jacob, it was one of faith. And you see that because if when you remember what God had told him and what Jacob did in response. Remember that God had told him in Genesis chapter 31, verse 3, Remember the instruction, the Lord said unto Jacob, return to the land of thy fathers and to thy kindred, and I will be with thee. So God gave Jacob the promise, I will be with thee. Jacob's response to that was, I better sneak away from Laban, or else harm's going to come to me. So the first thing that Jacob did was not believe what God had said, that he was going to be with him. So one of the things that we learned was that Jacob had a faith problem. One of the examples I put in the lesson this evening is in 1 Kings chapter 18, starting in verse 30, which is one of the greatest, I think one of the greatest examples of faith in the Bible. And it's Elijah said unto the people, come near unto me, and all the people came near unto him, and he repaired the altar of the Lord that was broken down. And Elijah took 12 stones according to the number of the tribes of the sons of Jacob, unto whom the word of the Lord came, saying, Israel shall be thy name, and with the stones to build an altar in the name of the Lord. And he made a trench about the altar as great as would contain 2 measures of seed. And he put the wood in order, and he cut the bullock in pieces and laid him on the wood and said, fill 4 barrels with water and pour it on the burnt sacrifice and on the wood. And he said, do it the second time, and they did it the second time. He said, do it the third time, and they did it the third time. And the water ran round about the altar, and he filled the trench also with water. And it came to pass at the time of the offering of the evening sacrifice that Elijah the prophet came near, and he said, Lord God of Abraham, Isaac, and of Israel, let it be known this day that thou art God in Israel, and that I am thy servant, and that I have done all these things at thy word. Hear me, O Lord, hear me, that this people may know that thou art the Lord God, and that thou hast turned their heart back again. Then the fire of the Lord fell and consumed the burnt sacrifice and the wood and the stones and the dust, and licked up the water that was in the trench. And then all the people saw, and they fell on their faces and said, the Lord, he is the God. The Lord, he is the God. Well, the God that Jacob believed in was, at that time, was not the same God. Jacob's God was not big enough to deliver him from Laban's house. So Jacob's faith was much too small. Elijah had a God that was big enough to that the fire came down and burnt the stones and the wood and the sacrifice and the water and everything. Jacob's God couldn't even get him away from Laban. So it was a matter of faith, not of circumstance or anything else. So that's exactly what Jacob was laughing at that time. Faith. Okay.